गौरचंद्राय राधिकाय तदालय कृष्णाय कृष्ण भक्ताय तद भक्ताय नमो नमः। सो वेलकम यू ऑल बैक। वी हैव अवर सेकंड सेशन सो टू से ऑफ अवर फर्स्ट डे और वन वीक रिट्रीट एंड रैडिकल पर्सनलिज्म। एज़ वी हैव बीन टॉकिंग दिस डेज, द आइडिया इज़ ड्यूरिंग द मॉर्निंग वी आर हैविंग somehow a presentation of the main theme of the day, and throughout the day we are hopefully somehow reflecting on that, whether through the journaling we have been doing, some other exercise or sharing, and in the evenings we will be having Q&As like today and sharing of other types one day in between. So today's day for Q&A. And sometimes for me, Q&As, I can call it also Q&Q, in the sense that I'm not just here to, I will give you answers to all your questions. You may have bring a question and that will create new questions, and the answer will bring new waves of possibilities. So the conversation is ongoing. That's the point. Now we are trying to bring not closure, no, but disclosure. You need that I open more?
Yes.
Yeah. Let me know if you need that I open even more, or we need to open the window or whatever. Yeah. So yeah, you are inviting to bring whether are questions, whether there are topics you may like to explore in further detail, whether they are related to today's topic or it can be something else, if you feel the need, the urgency. All is all. Yeah, okay. So everything is welcome. As once we say, like, all weather of the heart is welcome. So whether you have some rainy comments, some cloudy day, some stormy doubt, or whatever, all weather of the heart is welcome to the Sangha. So that's it. Anyone would like to bring something to the table, some contribution to the fire of collective introspection we are trying to engage all here together? If you don't have any question, this may help you. For some reason this book was here. That was a prudent. We can get some ideas here. What is a combine harvester? That will be Q&Q, because I have no clue how to give an answer to that. Why are the spiders in the bath? And so on. Anyhow. Yes, please.
So I was thinking, like, regarding vulnerability, it's not like, you know, like most of the other topics, it's not just like all or nothing, like degree of it, right? Like, it's not so much that, like, I mean, either I'm vulnerable or not. But so I was thinking, in a group dynamic like this, you know, how does that affect, you know, somebody being like less vulnerable to a lesser degree and another person more, or something like that? I was kind of thinking of it because, like, earlier when we did this eye contact, it took me quite a bit of time, or probably the whole, you know, couple 2 minutes or whatever. Mm-hmm. What I noticed was I just had like a lot of fear of being seen, to the point that I felt I wasn't vulnerable at all. And I kind of also felt a bit like guilty or bad that, you know, I wasn't allowing that person to be fully vulnerable. I'm wondering, like, how does that affect and how we can work on that to like help ourselves and others.
Well, you are doing it by presenting this question already, right? So that's part of the, that's probably exactly what we, what you need to do in your particular stage to be vulnerable enough as to share, I'm having difficulty being vulnerable. Well, you are doing it already, right? Like sometimes you will ask how to pray, just praying. No. And if you are trying and it seems it's not working, but you are trying since you are, it's working. If you, the result of that is a sincere recognition of your present condition, that shows that it's working because it's taking you to a place of honest acknowledgement of whatever you are, wherever you are. It's not, again, my hope, so to say, or not my hope, but the intention of the exercise that we did today, of the eye gazing, is not necessarily full success in the sense of, again, okay, we will be able to absolutely enter into the heart of the other person and I will allow the other person to visit me from tip to toe. And at the end of the 2 minutes, we became best friends forever. And I'm, no, probably you realize I'm pretty afraid. I'm pretty armored. No, I have my defense. But that in itself is an epiphany. That in itself is as painful as that may be. No, I'm not saying that's the ultimate goal, stay there forever, but just seeing that and now having the courage of sharing it openly, all that in itself showed further degrees of vulnerability, which may be the best thing, the best expression of vulnerability you can bring today. No, so again, this whole thing of vulnerability on any topic we are sharing is not about comparison, right? Like, okay, where is, oh, there, they were more able than me. They were more successful in the eye gazing exercise. No, because the whole intention is to bring vulnerability, and we can take an exercise in vulnerability and make it, again, something else. Comparison, ego, unknown, competition. I will be more vulnerable than you in the next one. and I'm just caricaturizing a little bit the whole thing, but it happens like this. And it's okay. It's part of the journey, as we were talking today on the table. No? Whenever these things come, that, how to say, we can very easily become embarrassed of that, ashamed, feel guilty, and bring all this like primitive narratives of weeping and self-loading. And no, it's part of the journey. No, maybe the invitation there is vulnerability is to accept that, to stay in that place, and to, even despite our own messiness, again, we are doing this all together. So if someone is having some difficult moment in the navigation, the rest is there ideally to hold space. So whomever is going through some like stormy weather, you can feel the support and the company and the affection that, like, as it's happening now. I'm feeling that you're opening, and the rest, your opening opens everyone else. No, and the opening can be on the level of, I cannot open. No, that's an opening. No, like we were saying with the writing exercise, if you feel I don't know what to write, that's what you have to write. And you're being honest. Again, you are not faking it with the page. I won't put anything, because what if the page gets to know that I don't know what to write? What will my pen think about me? What will this book think of notebook? Tell the other notebooks about me, and they will hold, no, you're just right. I don't have a clue what to put in this precise moment. And I'm being honest and vulnerable. So basically that, and the moment you are doing that, you are not stuck. We'll keep flowing. So again, that's what I will say. I wouldn't say like, no, Svetlana Radhika, you should do this and this so you don't fail miserably the next time and you are successful in your... No, that was what it was supposed to be. No, that was the lesson of today's gazing, or today's vulnerability of today. Mm-hmm. And again, try, I will recommend, allow yourself to, in your quote-unquote failure, which is not failure, that's why I'm putting lots of quotation marks, but how we feel it sometimes, allow yourself also to feel the nourishment and the support and the validation of the group, which is in itself empowerment, because again, vulnerability is meant to bring empowerment. And we have been talking here about the importance of expressing vulnerability in a safe space, and that brings empowerment. So this will be a moment like that. No? I'm failing in something. I think I'm failing in something. But the moment you acknowledge that sincerely, you cannot call that a failure anymore. So strictly speaking, I will say if you are honest in your life, in acknowledging what happens to you, strictly speaking, you cannot talk about failure. You are never failing, even when you're failing. If you are honest about the failing, that's no longer a failure. So how much? That's why Krishna says so many times in the scripture, if you are sincere as a practitioner, in the 11th canto, there is this verse, you can be running with eyes closed and you won't fail. You won't fall. Even if you run with eyes closed. Imagine, try to run with eyes. We won't make that exercise. That can end up in some tragedy. Or the young ones can try, but there are not that many young ones. So yeah, but Krishna says, you run with eyes closed and you will not fall. No, like implying if you have that sincerity, that authenticity, that's important thing. Krishna's saying, I don't care if you fail. Why you care so much? I only care, that you are honest and sincere. Krishna's not counting how many times you fail. And then at the end of your life, he will bring the list and show it in front of your face. No, he's caring for an honest relationship. That's it. Failures, not failures. He's not seeing that. We are seeing that. So yeah, gradually we have to be vulnerable. Implies acknowledging all this, no? And realizing I'm not being seen by my failures, nor even by my successes in terms of performance. No? Real success is honest presentation of my hearts, especially in the moments I'm quote unquote failing. That's when you have the greatest opportunity to be honest and humble and sincere. No? When we are doing everything perfect, that's quite more difficult. In that moment, we very easily become stuck. Like, I'm perfect. I'm doing everything nice. I did my eye gazing in a very cool way. And vulnerability is lost. You lost the vulnerability of the you lost sight of the purpose of the exercise. So that's what comes. I don't know if that makes any sense. What do you think?
Yeah, it does. I guess this helps to actually reveal it. And, you know, I mean, it is funny, we were laughing when you said you're thinking like others are doing a good job, but that's exactly what it felt.
Right. Yeah, but as they say, the grass seems greener on the other side of the fence also, right? So we generally, many of us, not all, but have this idea that no matter how bad or good I do, generally the others seem to be doing better than me always for whatever reason. An interesting paradox is that everyone else probably is thinking exactly the same thing. And that's why it's so important that we get together like here and everyone's voicing their own journey. So you realize, oh, okay, they are going through the exact same thing I'm going. It was not that I was the worst of the worst and everyone else was like ultra perfect. And everyone starts to realize, okay, it seems we are on this journey together. Together, actually, not like all of them are over there and I'm here by myself, which sometimes we think like that, and that makes the whole journey utterly miserable. No? Imagine if I'm in this room and I think all of you are in that place of the journey and I'm just here dealing with this stuff, only myself. Nobody else is going through what I'm going. Nobody else can be empathic because they're in another trip. And we self-isolate to a point that it's suffocating, it's torture. So that's why we need to relate. We seem to be quite close in the journey, and that makes for a more celebratory journey, pilgrimage. So, yeah. Yeah, comparison is the matter of discouragement, put it that way. Yeah. We cannot, how we will compare with the other person? That's a form of impersonalism, because it's a way of not acknowledging that I'm a unique, irrepeatable being. So how can I compare with someone else? No. if each of us is different, so it's important to own your own journey. Yeah. Like Bhagavatam says, "Sve sve adhikari janishta saguna parikirtita." Acknowledging your adhikar. So adhikar means your present level of capacity for whatever. Your limitations is not to be sincerely assessing where I am today. Saguna parikirtita. That's real virtue. Says about even if it's in a situation where it's not the most glorious in our opinion, but and say that's real. Bhaktivinoda Thakur will translate that's real beauty. So, yeah. And as Krishna says in the Gita, better you do your duty bad than try to do someone else's perfect. So we are trying to be honest, to be sincere, to do eye gazing or whatever we are trying to do. Even if it doesn't work as we expected, we are trying. And that's it. That's the success is in the endeavor, not in the fruit. That's a basic elementary karma yoga teaching. The reward is not the fruit of your action, it's the fact that you're engaging in the proper action. So we are trying to engage in what we know is good for us. Fruit result, that's in one sense secondary.
It's easy to be vulnerable. The whole with your deity, with your
yeah.
Ajahn,
mm-hmm.
even in your own family situation sometimes, but when you take that vulnerability, when you go out, and you may feel afraid of attack, of people taking advantage of your vulnerability, then you close up. Then that's not what you put that shell on again, that mask on again.
Mm.
How do you... What do you do? What do you do to make yourself be safe?
Great question. Yeah, I briefly mentioned that today in the morning, but not entering into the detail, but we mentioned that vulnerability should be, expressed also improper with boundaries, because sometimes it's not that we want to criticize anyone, but not everyone knows how to deal with vulnerability. So I may try to be vulnerable with my best intention to someone, and that someone may be a good person, but he or she doesn't know what to do with vulnerability. So in his or her best intention, he may end up trampling on my vulnerability, and I may feel abused by that, even though the person didn't have any intention to abuse me. But it can happen, so that's very delicate, because there are lots of research of many forms of abuse are done by people who didn't intend to do abuse, but just they were not able to handle the particular situation, whether it's in terms of vulnerability or whatever. No? So that basically sets the tone for, of course, I like to be vulnerable with everyone and open and transparent and reveal my mind, but as one would say, we are not in Golok Vrindavan yet. No. Like implying, it's not that everyone around me is fully enlightened. So, and it's not that also I'm judging them. You are not fully enlightened. I cannot be vulnerable with you. I will try my best with each person I meet as much as that's possible in any given interaction. Because also if I'm going to the shopping mall, to the market to buy some groceries for 5 minutes, I may not be able to be absolutely vulnerable with the cash. The cashier there, we need some time to, right? So also it's not about forcing that, but I will say a way of being vulnerable is trying, again, we talked today about vulnerable means to be yourself, because yourself, you yourself are vulnerable. So in one sense, they are synonymous. So one way to understand being vulnerable is try to be as much as yourself as you can, which doesn't mean that you are just opening yourself to the extreme with any single person, every single person after 2 minutes of conversation. But try to be as authentic as much as you can, as much as the situation allows. And of course, in some situations, we respect, how to say, we respect the capacities of the environment. No? I can go to a place where I know if I start to talk about the things in detail, people will start to feel like a little uncomfortable. So I don't want to disturb them. That doesn't mean I have to put masks and make a character out of me. It's just I know who I am. I know who I would like to be in all my potential, but also I try to be empathic with the situation, the environment, the capacity, and I know, like, I'm not impose myself on them. But also at the same time, we need people with whom to be, I would say, fully vulnerable. And I'm talking this as a principle because I remember we were talking with a devotee in Switzerland, who is a psychologist, and we were having some healthy differences of opinion, but we're not so much differences of opinion at the end. But he will tell me in some particular cases, some people come from, I don't know, just a very heavy, wild situation of abuse. And they are in a particular situation where I cannot tell them, try to be vulnerable. No, it's not moment for that. No, at least with one person, not even with one person. No, they are in some transition, recovery. The shell is necessary to protect. I mean, so I'm talking here as a general principle, but I also acknowledge that there are specific situations which require more sensitive treatment. No, but so I will say that. No, trying to. I mean, in order to be as vulnerable as we can, of course, we need someone who needs to know what to do with my vulnerability. And even if they do not know, but they love us and they're willing to learn, okay, that's important. No, there's an avenue there. But to be honest, yeah, I found that not many people is that interested in that. I mean, in potential, we all have that potential, but in practice, many people, not to criticize again, just we are not trained to that. We are afraid of that. If you go to the street and ask a person, like, I would like to open my heart to you full, the person will horrify generally, will call a taxi and leave as soon as possible because it's like, because receiving your vulnerable heart implies contacting my own vulnerable heart. No, I cannot just receive you fully, vulnerably, and may remain like a robot. It's not possible. One thing. So again, many people is afraid of contacting their vulnerability because unconsciously even they don't know what will happen if they go there. No? Especially if after years and years one has not visited that place and one has put all the stuff in the shed. And now the shed has a life of its own, basically. You know? And you hear voices every time you walk nearby the shed. And it's like one hand comes from the window. And it's like, I won't open that. I will inaugurate the second shed and keep pushing the other stuff there. So some situation invites you. So now you go and enter the shed. And no way, that's too much. No? But it's healthy that we are willing to do that. And that's vulnerability. Again, vulnerability and courage are compared, you know, are put on the same level. You know? In situation vulnerability, I mean, you can only be courageous if you're in a situation where you clearly feel I'm vulnerable here. You cannot be courageous from your comfort zone. No. We are sitting there. I'm not talking about you in the sofa now, nothing personal. In the sofa, internal sofa of comfort zone, and no challenge, nothing. I'm being very courageous. No. You need to be pushed outside that comfort zone. So again, who is willing to do that voluntarily? Generally, we have not been trained to do that. That skill, that muscle may not be. So I'm saying that so we have more understanding, and we are not like criticizing. They are not vulnerable. They are not willing to do that. I mean, even ourselves, we may not perceive, we may perceive we are not that willing yet. It's a muscle that needs to be trained. No? The more we train it, the more natural it becomes. And at one point, you cannot live without doing that, without opening your heart, right? So that's what I will say, you know, try to remain, at least remain with that intention. I like to remain vulnerable. I want to be honest. I want to be myself as much as I can always. And of course, when I'm confronting people, meeting people, situations, I try to be sensitive how much of that I can be expressed without making the other person uncomfortable. But at the same time, knowing that I need some people or some environment where I can be myself fully. Okay, I can adjust in certain situations how much of myself comes, but also I need situations where I don't need to adjust anything. I just need to flow unimpeded, so to say. No? And that's what we will call Swajatiya Sadhusanga, as Rupa Goswami will say, like like-minded, intimate fellowship, brotherhood, sisterhood, even if it's one more person. I'm not talking here about 300 people in a community. You cannot be vulnerable with 300 people. You need just more one-on-one, personal, intimate. Here we are 20, and we are up to the limit. More than 20 starts to become a crowd here. No? So we are keeping it. We are keeping it. Like, hopefully, intimacy is there. So, yeah, that's how it works, at least for me. Right, the willingness to open and be vulnerable is there. I mean, the willingness to give me a chance and the other person a chance to share from that place, hopefully, is always there. Hopefully, we don't become cynical, like, no, I know what's that about, I won't do it anymore. No, and of course, if we have been abused or betrayed, it makes sense that sometimes we have some mechanism. It makes sense. It's good to accept that, to acknowledge that with self-compassion, but at the same time to realize, yeah, but I need to trust, I need to open. At one point, it may not be the moment, maybe some wounds are healing, some very terrible recent situation has happened, so there's periods of hibernation, so to say, in that sense. But the line is fine between hibernation and eternal isolation and bypassing and escapism, and the heart becomes like, no, and we don't want that. No, we want the heart to melt, not to become more like a rock of what it is. So yeah, and it's gradual. No, again, when I'm saying open yourself fully, it's not that, okay, I press the whatever note in the keyboard, here I am, fully vulnerable. It's all a gradual process, no? So we may open a little bit, and it works with someone. Okay, works. Wow, it works. Oh, I'm still alive. I was sincere. I was not defamed. No gossip. No internet, social media thread about me. Okay, next time I meet this person, I will open 1 millimeter extra. It's a gradual process for some. So, and I open a little bit more, and oh, it still is working. Next time, no? So gradually, and at one point it's natural. So yeah, we should also be cautious. We should not be extremely naive. Ideally, we should not be extremely cynical. We should find a middle point between naivety and cynicism. Probably in the beginning we've been the other two, right? We are naive and idealistic and then we are hit by life. Yeah. And sometimes we tend to run from one extreme to the other, cynical, not like not defensive, not trusting it. But at one point we feel this is not good either. So, and I cannot be naive again. I already have tasted the arena of life. So then, okay, middle point with discernment, with compassion for me, for others, acceptance, gradual process. It's a skill to be harnessed. No,
yeah.
Gradually may take time, no problem. Dr. Asa.
Yeah, and it seems that the going back and forth the one side of the pendulum to the other is how we actually develop discernment.
Mm-hmm.
But you go, okay, no, that was too far. So then you learn to take a step back, and then you go again, take a step back. And
yeah.
The going too far part, the two part, isn't a failure. It's part of the developing discernment.
Yeah.
I really appreciate your bringing up the word capacity. Capacity in the other person, because that really gives us some legitimate place for empathy and for being not blaming people, and for ourselves to take responsibility for that discerning part.
Like we have been talking a little bit these days about not taking things personally, you know? So I can try to talk to someone and be vulnerable when the other person is not reciprocating. What to do with that? I can blame the person, judge the person, stigmatize the person, condemn the person, take it personally, no, and be defensive, play the victim. So many things I can do all wrong, so to say, instead of saying why that person is not able to be, to receive my vulnerability, to be vulnerable himself, herself, what may be the fear behind that. And generally I will say whenever, because many times we judge each other on certain level, like, oh, that person was angry, oh, that person was whatever, judgmental, oh, that person was defensive. But if we are able to go beyond that and see that behind that generally there is fear of some type, so we can see that person in terms of fear, that opens the door for more understanding and empathy. Because instead of seeing like a violent, defensive, argumentative person, I'm seeing a fragile, fearful, vulnerable entity that I can empathize with, pray for, understand, be compassionate toward. And that dissolves a lot, all this ego game of like, you did that to me and you're bad and you have this, and it still is so superficial. That's so superficial. No, if we go deeper than that, we realize we may be all afraid. No, we are afraid of this or of whatever things. And that's what the Bhagavatam say, Bhayandvitya Abhinivesha. Being an illusion, being a conditioned soul, means we still are not able to see the totality of existence as one integrated whole, but we see fragmented parts. And that makes us fragmented. And out of being fragmented, we have fear. And we react to that in different ways, attacking, defensive, arguing, consuming, escaping, denying, blaming, blah, 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 blah. All that, the endless list, can be seen as a symptom of fear. So I think, at least for me, it's very healthy to do that exercise, not only to others, but also to me. No, when there's some reactivity or whatever it comes, it's like, what's the fear or what's hurting? Was if you to ask the question in a more understanding way and in more that lends to compassion. Because if we don't bring compassion into the picture, from which place we are seeing each other, talking to each other. So yeah. I don't know if that helps, Shampriya. Seva Priya, sorry. Thank you.
I was thinking this morning when you were speaking that I never really heard anyone, any devotee, speak about vulnerability before. In all these years of being around devotees and Christian consciousness, after 30 years we start to hear about vulnerability, and it takes some time to take in what it is. I've been reading, as you know, like this radical personalism for however long it is that I've had it. And still thinking today, I don't really fully grasp what it is. But, you know, we can see like most of us have ended up here because we've had experiences where we didn't feel that everything was progressing properly for us,
mm-hmm.
and that's the result of not being vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm just sort of following, I think I'm rambling a little bit, but
no, that's that's going somewhere.
Okay. But just following off the sake of Priya's question, and, you know, thinking about this authenticity and vulnerability, that if you don't have, so if, like you say, if you're vulnerable where it's not received well, and so then you realize I can't really do that there, but if everyone starts doing that in a group, then you get the experience that we've all had. And you know, my realization this morning listening to your talk was that why we're attracted to this now is because what we've experienced is what happens when it's the opposite of vulnerability,
mm-hmm.
which
mm-hmm.
is that nobody, you know, generalization, mm-hmm. really knows where they're at on the spiritual path. So it's like a false practice because you're sort of fooling yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But you think you have to keep that up because that's what everybody else seems to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
So the vulnerability is related to performing.
Mm.
That's not exactly a question, but maybe you have something.
No, I mean, I said if you have comments, I'm not asking just for questions, mm-hmm. reflections, musings, you say in English?
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm practicing my English with you at the same time. Yeah.
I suppose the conclusion of it is that if there's not vulnerability, that's when it becomes more of a performance because you're afraid to look at where you really are yourself, and you're certainly afraid to let anybody else see it.
Yeah.
And then everyone starts doing that.
Yeah.
And then it just becomes this totally unhealthy.
That's called asatsanga. And we do that a lot in the name of Sadhu Sangha. But yeah, totally agree with you. And how that can be reinforced in an environment, because you can have, you may even come to an ashram or to any group. We are not smashing our own tradition only. you can be with the desire of being vulnerable and open, but you realize, okay, nobody's doing that here. So it seems that it's not the norm, and I'm longing to belong, so okay, I will submit to the local mood.
Mm-hmm.
But you are not belonging there, you are fitting in.
Mm-hmm.
You stop being who you are to fit in.
Mm-hmm.
And then everyone is reinforcing each other's behavior, and it seems that that's the only way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So then comes the idea, they start to feel bad because I'm not being vulnerable, I'm not being myself, I'm losing myself, and I'm feeling terrible, but nobody seems to be doing something different, although everyone else is feeling probably equally terrible. Again, the same point, but nobody's talking about it. So it's just keep the show running. Show must go on, as the same song says. Right? Don't talk about it. But everyone is feeling equally terrible probably. No? So the importance of voicing it, of course, in some environments, unfortunately, the voicing is not being promoted. In some, it's not even allowed. And for me, that's toxic and that's dangerous, and that's not Sadhu Sangha, and that's Asat Sangha. And we do lots of Asat Sangha in the name of Sadhu Sangha. Because Sadhu Sangha, as we said yesterday, is not a social gathering, it's not a crowd of number of people in one same room eating pizza or popcorn or whatever, or even chanting Hare Krishna. If there's no vulnerability in your chanting, with all respect to your beautiful melodies, I don't consider that kirtan. That's musical entertainment at best. If you are not being vulnerable and you're chanting, what's that? It's musical, but mystical? I don't think so, right? So again, what's the inner substance? Externally, we may be gather all the correct things are there, the instruments, the proper ritual, what to say. But if we are not being vulnerable, it's just we are reinforcing performance, right? We were talking with some during lunch about that, which was your work, you used the word book, something with book. Book?
Book.
Like like spirituality from the book, the official book you are given when you go to study something. Was not book. We're talking about transformation, importance of having transformation in one's practice, but sometimes we are just following the
textbook.
Yeah.
share a few two words about that. You can do
it.
I mean, whatever. Remember that we were talking a little bit about that?
Yes.
What came to you?
And we think, well, when I thought that
yeah.
spirituality was, am I my service to my deities or any of it says, is it where you can think, oh, it's not textbook, my relationship with Krishna is textbook Vaishnava behavior or Vaishnava etiquette. And that sounds really like monotonous and mechanical, doesn't it? But yeah, and it is just, it since it's about love, the more unique our practice becomes, at least internally, then that's much better than, oh, you should do it like this, and it has to be like this, and it's just cookie cutter and paste. So like that's what we were talking about, was that it's about the love and devotion and the vulnerability within our own practice, because if it's just textbook, then there's no point doing it then. Just if you're transformed, whatever your unique relationship is, then that's the whole point, really. If you're being transformed, then that's what matters. Yeah, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay, back to you.
Thank you. Sorry for the surprise invitation. You were not expecting that one, right?
Careful.
That's the price of being sitting close.
I'll sit over somewhere.
Jamun is a little closer. Tomorrow she will be there. Day after tomorrow she will be there. Yeah, so you choose. You choose to practice bhakti in a performative way or in a transformative way. And so it's a good question to ask ourselves on a daily basis. I'm being performative in my spiritual life, or I'm being transformative. At least trying to look for a transformation. No? Like it's practice. Being a devotee is not just adopting a set of beliefs. No, like I believe in this, in the correct thing, and doing the correct things, and being a nice boy and a nice girl, no, but no transformation. I'm just ascribing to what's legal, according to the tradition, so to say. And it's more a way of maybe feeling yourself validated. Maybe it's a validation thing you have unresolved even from before coming to Krishna consciousness. So you want validation, acceptance. So you subscribe to whatever. You are told that it's legal to be subscribed. I have to believe in this, although I don't understand what I'm believing in, and I'm doing this, although it makes no sense, and I'm doing that. But you're a partner, you belong, and you're saved at the end of this life. I don't know how, but magically, you're still a mess, dysfunctional, and disjointed, but you will be taken to Golok Vrindavan. And there you will be perfect. And it's like... How does it work? Like that, we're talking about that also in the table. If I'm not reaching that place here and now, I'm not going there. If I'm absolutely evasive, I'm going to extremes, right? Absolutely evasive and dysfunctional and all that stuff, I cannot just think I leave my body and I'm in Golok Vrindavan with a fully aligned, perfect identity. It all starts here or it doesn't start at all. So sometimes I make the black humor joke. If not, this another option could be you become a totally spiritual bypassy dysfunctional bhakta with hundreds and thousands of unresolved issues and unredeemed parts and this whatever, and you leave your body and you reach pearly gates, the doors of Golok, and there will be a purgatory with a big team of psychologists there waiting. You're about to enter spiritual. You go there, spend some time. We need some, putting oil in the oiling the machine, and so. And then you come back to the lila. So not you don't mess the whole thing here in Vrindavan. You're such a mess. Of course, it doesn't work like that, no. Because sometimes we may also even think like that. Yeah, it doesn't matter. I'm total mess, but somehow there will be some final adjustment, and I'm there. Oh, we have to. Whatever we want to be in eternity, it has to happen here. No. However, I want to serve Krishna forever, it has to begin here. I mean, it has to be like a natural, irresistible transition. That is basically who you are already are, and become more and more and more and more and more of that. And that eventually what we call spiritual identity, siddhadeha, however you may like to call it. So, yeah. So It was not a question, and mine was not an answer, therefore, but I hope that helps. Yeah.
At a certain point, then that just doesn't work anymore. It, you know, the performance just doesn't work anymore. It falls apart, everything breaks apart.
Thank God.
Yeah.
Of course. It has to break. I mean, it has to collapse. Yeah. That's the idea. That's showing it's not natural, it's not healthy. It has, the problem is when we think we are so whatever covered that we think I have to do something for this not to collapse. No, I cannot see the necessity of the collapse, and I just overexhaust. I was already exhausted in that pattern, and now the pattern is collapsing, and I'm double overexhausting to keep the collapse in place and put some, like, how do you say, scotch tape on this stuff. And the whole needs, the whole thing needs to collapse, but we are still like, no, allow that to collapse. No. It's not final death, right? That needs to die. So what needs to be born is born. So we have to embrace death in a healthy way. Yeah. Robin, well, I don't know, few hands raised. Which of some of you is more related to what she said? Four hands now. Okay, let's go to Ravinder. We'll go to all of you, of course.
I'll try to not get lost in this. But just to start from, one of the most important things that I heard from Vaishnava in the beginning when I approached it was that the jiva really only knows itself. It cannot really know another. Like you say, we're not at that point of we're not aware of the whole totality of our being, even as a group of jivas and the material manifestation. You know, it's like we can only really know ourselves. So, like you say, ultimately we go into fear because of that.
Because of
realizing that all we can do is find ourselves. That actually, however much we want to connect with our objects of our desire, the sense objects, we never can, or we will get some reaction for trying to do so. Well, let me a little bit further than I can. What I'm thinking is this: for me, the vulnerability. So, from a young age, when I decided, like, being a very much an individualist type person, but I wanted to change my track. So then, in the social circles, when I wasn't doing the things that I was doing for a few years, and suddenly wanting to go deeper and to understand more about myself and the world around me and everything, then that was really vulnerable. But it was almost like dangerously vulnerable at times, and it did backfire quite a few times, and it's really heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, like going into devotee world, going into the ashram, and then almost like, again, like you say, the difference between, you know, transformative and performative, and then seeing all of that, and then again, like devotees would say, oh, just don't try to go deeper, just like everyone else, just chant, just prasadam, like harinam. Don't go any further. It's like a message. So again, it was there. And then, but it was through that kind of realization that I saw, for myself at least, and that actually it's, everybody can only take so much of being vulnerable. Like you said, it seems an obvious statement, what we've been talking about. But then you realize that some people, really all you could do is like even talk about somebody else's vulnerability, and that's already almost too much for some people because of fear, like the same, because the fear is too much. So there, like, so preaching can be, you give examples of other people's vulnerability, and that's a great teacher then for that individual, because they can't go into their own vulnerability very far. And then someone like myself just too much dangerously into vulnerability, but now I learn the lesson, but the the gift of vulnerability is to see the vulnerabilities. A very vulnerable position.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that's. I appreciate the complimentary statements, because I was telling before, okay, I'm opening myself to someone, and it's a gradual process for the other person maybe to receive me gradually, but also for my own capacity of opening myself. So as you say, we have to be also. I'm not prescribing any formula of like be fully vulnerable right now, because as we say, it may be too much for, and what is too much for some is less than too much for others. So again, no point of comparison, but yeah, maybe a valid question will be from the situation I'm in, what's the healthiest contact with the reality of vulnerability, whether that is me being vulnerable, me witnessing someone else's vulnerability on some sustainable degree, hearing about, but I will say we have to be careful not to dismiss vulnerability like altogether from the map, like you don't need to do that, just chant and be happy, that's it. But chant means be vulnerable. So the problem is that it's inserted, it's in part of the chanting, being vulnerable, but when we separate the two and say, no, you just chant, you don't need to be vulnerable, then you don't have any of the two, right? You don't need to go deep, just chant. But chant means to go deep. So if I make a separate thing, then, okay, chanting is about being superficial, not being deep, not being vulnerable. And that developed my whole idea of chanting, and no wonder, oh, chanting is not working. Yeah, because chanting is not chanting. That's not the chanting. But yeah, I agree that, as I mentioned, the example with my friend psychologist, that depending on the unique situation of each individual, some people may not even, at a certain particular time, they cannot even talk about it or hear about vulnerability, because they are too vulnerable, it's too much, no? So yeah, I'm sharing this in general, but we have to be very cautious and sensitive in how we apply that to, not only to others, to ourselves, of course. Yeah. Thank you. Teresa?
As the devotees were speaking, it kind of came the relationship between vulnerability and creativity. Mm-hmm. It seems like we can't be creative unless we are vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And that creativity is a lot of about becoming ourselves, creating ourselves, our world that we want to live in. And there's no creativity without vulnerability.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. That recalls me an author that I like. He will speak about artists and how artists basically have to inhabit the unknown, how to leave comfort zone and like flirt, let's put it that way, flirt with what's outside of the comfort zone. And he will speak in terms of order, chaos and order. So order is like the comfort zone, which is, we are not condemning the comfort zone. Comfort zone is the place where everything is relatively predictable. I know there is dinner after that. I don't know. That may not be the comfort zone. And anyhow, there is a bed to sleep in tonight. So there is some certainty that gives some stability. So that's the comfort zone. No? Predictability, things will happen in a certain way, and I keep my sanity in place. But there is something called, outside of order, comfort zone, chaos. Chaos is not a bad word. It's just what lies beyond order, what lies beyond the controllable, the predictable, what is maybe scary, is unknown. And an artist, he will say, an artist is someone, a real artist is not someone who makes things predictably from comfort zone. That's not a real artist. No? Just like a product, okay, this sells better, so let's compose some songs. All the same, this is what it sells. That's not to be an artist, with all respect. So he will say the artist is like inhabiting the unknown, goes outside of the comfort zone, goes to the chaos realm and makes sense of the chaos and gives some order to the chaos and brings that for us to, no? So it's somehow similar to that, no? Because an artist is a creative person, and to go outside of the comfort zone implies vulnerability. No, I mean, outside of your comfort zone, you are vulnerable. You are clearly vulnerable. Liminal space. What's going on here is not in my control. Clearly, I'm dealing with unknown forces. I'm trying to confront that and to make order out of chaos. So yeah, that's another way of saying what you're mentioning. But yeah, thank you for the connection, creativity, and vulnerability. Yeah. Well, even what we are doing, the writing, the journaling, that's a creative act. So for that to happen, yeah, we have to be us, basically.
I mean, we are creative beings. Devotional service mm-hmm. is the process of creativity, yeah. of creating ourselves.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Madhumati?
I've had so many thoughts. but one thing I was thinking, you know, when I think vulnerability, I also think of being humble. And I think for many of us, we're told to be humble. But we were told to be humble, not as a matter of opening up our vulnerability and going deeper, but it was like, you be humble so I can tell you what to do.
Yeah.
So it's such an interesting thing to explore vulnerability and
mm-hmm. yeah.
what the reality of that is.
Mm, yeah. I like not to make vulnerability an absolute synonym with humility, but they are very close to each other, no? And it may be a good word to speak about humility for those who get triggered with the word humility.
Yeah.
Because that happens, no? Like the other day was in, I don't know where, I'm traveling a little bit, sorry. Maybe it was in Belgium or maybe it was in Italy. Which was the word? Oh, no, which was a verse in Belgium. No? As today I quoted Apicet Sudaracharo, mm-hmm. this verse that Krishna says, even if you misbehave, if you are honest, you are a sadhu. And I quoted the verse in the context I'm used to quote. For those who know me, you know from which place I'm quoting that verse. Like implying, even if you are a mess, but you are an honest mess, Krishna considers you a sadhu. Not like to feel proud I'm a sadhu, but just to feel humbled by his generosity. But many devotees have heard that verse so many times being quoted to justify abuse.
Yeah.
And they will come to me at the end of the class, Maharaj, I get your point, but I get so triggered with that verse. Like basically telling me, don't quote that verse again, please. and for me, it's like, okay, sorry, I understand it. Of course, we cannot just edit the Bhagavad Gita and take verses out. But we may need to adjust some things. Like, for example, again, words like humility or surrender or who knows. Each one has their own trigger, trauma, glossary. But humility is one, no? Because in the name of humility, we have expected or demanded something which is not humility, which is close to abuse and the... Sorry?
Opens up exploitation.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, exploitation and blind submission and the humility. Yeah, humility has to do basically with, first of all, again, vulnerability. Be humble, yes, but what's humility? And first, if I tell you be humble, maybe first question is what's that mean? What's the meaning of that? And it has to make sense to me, because if the answer to be humble is shut up, don't think, and submit to whatever I have to say, hopefully in reply to that I will say, no, sir.
Yeah.
Right? That doesn't work. That's not humility. That doesn't, my gut feeling say, that's not healthy. That's cultish. But Mahaprabhu said you have to be more humble, lower than the blade of grass. Now, it's interesting because the verse say be more humble or as humble, but which one is that lower? And the implications of lower, again, carry some further, be lower. No? Generally lower than me, who I'm telling you to be lower. But again, the example that Mahaprabhu is giving is totally different. Say, be like the blade of grass. What's a blade of grass? The blade of grass is bending without breaking. So bending doesn't mean just fall at my feet. Bending means be flexible, be willing to adapt in a way that is not breaking you. But many times in the be humble narrative, we are breaking everyone in our way. Be humble, blah, 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 blah. But the example of the blade of grass is it's bending, it's flexible, it's elastic, it's adapting. and it's not breaking. So in the example, there is already a warning about do not do it in a dysfunctional way. No. Bend, bow down, all that stuff, but do not break. Do it in a way that is sustainable, that is healthy. That's what the grass does. Again, that's implied in that first line. Okay, maybe we didn't receive that explanation when we were told to become. but that's the sustainable way of reading that. You know? Because, of course, of that same line, we can create the whole cult. And of that same line, we can draw a very healthy, inspiring message from Mahaprabhu, from the blade of grass itself. You know? So. So vulnerability for me, that has to do with the same thing, no? Like, do it in such a way that you are not breaking, no? You're not breaking down, you are breaking through, no? Sometimes breaking through may feel like a breakdown also, let's be honest. But it has to be a breakthrough. If it's just breaking down, that's not the intention of our acharyas, of Krishna. So, yeah. Radha Priya, you were raising your hand a few minutes ago.
I think that what I was going to say has probably been said. I was talking about 30 years not hearing about vulnerability. I was thinking, it must be so much a part of the mood of devotion. Mm. And then I was thinking that humility, true humility, and the service mood, and even prayer, how we pray. Kirtan, I mean, to really bring our hearts into that, and we do that in open. Mm-hmm. And that is a really vulnerable thing.
Mm-hmm.
We do it together, mm-hmm. you know, from the core of ourselves. So I was thinking all of those are actually vulnerability,
mm-hmm.
when they're really offered.
Yeah, yeah.
Open-heartedly, which is
the idea, isn't it? Yeah, and I will say to that, but even if that's taking place, generally we also need to have words for that, because we may be being vulnerable, mm-hmm. but if then we receive the narrative, you cannot be vulnerable, because sometimes that can happen. We are being vulnerable in prayer, in kirtan, but in the official narratives, the word is not appearing. Or even it's like smashed. You don't need to do that. But actually, I'm doing that. But I'm receiving the message that I need to do that. So that creates some type of short circuiting. No? You follow my point? So that can. I'm not saying that's happening always, but that can happen. You are actually naturally praying a certain way and going to a certain place, which is what vulnerability is about. But we are not naming and framing it. So we are lacking a language. Mm-hmm. To make sense of our experience. No? So sometimes words are limiting, but sometimes words help. Not to have certain words that helps us make sense of what I'm going through. No? To put a framework to our experience. Because all of us are having experiences, but what's the framework in which we are having those experiences? You may have in a very valid, beautiful experience, but if the framework is not healthy, you feel that experience, you feel ashamed of having that experience. You follow my point?
Mm.
Or the opposite, of course. You can be pursuing things that are not healthy, but the framework is such that it's promoting that stuff, and you think, oh, that means to be advancing in bhakti. And no, sir. But the framework is not the, so sometimes changing the framework changes experience also, no? Change the way to relate to experience. So. And sometimes framework is the words we may be using. Just learning to use some words. Oh, change. Oh, the same thing with other words is that I totally agree with that. And I use the classical words. You are totally triggered. I don't want to hear that. Say the same thing with another word. Oh, that's beautiful. That was the same thing, right? But sometimes we need that, and it's okay. No, it's okay. We need a different word. Sometimes, as I told you, they will say, well, don't use the word whatever. Surrender. I get triggered. Okay, let's find another word. Maybe we have to invent a new word. It's totally fine. let's create. I like to create words. So in my attempt of learning English, I end up creating words. Anyhow, I saw a few. And one more thing that you were mentioning this. Okay, I never heard the word vulnerability spoken in 30 years. And of course, in one sense, I mean, I'm not happy. It's not that I'm happy. Oh, I'm so happy that you are listening, hearing them from them. I'm so sad that that's not happening. I'm not saying that's not happening besides me. I mean, I know the devotees, but yeah, I agree that we need to, yeah, to include more of these expressions. And it's just a word, but it starts to create its own churning, so to say. There were a few raised hands. I lost sight of who. Dumon, okay.
I'll call if it's okay.
Yes.
Absolutely, yes. Earlier in the class today, he was talking about personal experience, personal experience.
Yeah.
So then how do we know if our personal experience is not some mental concoction? Because it's that, you know, along with vulnerability, to actually be practicing and have a personal experience is a vulnerable state. But this is my personal experience that I'm hearing here, is that I may have some reciprocation, some grace, but then it's like, it's the hajj, you're this, you're that, speculation. Does it say it? Did you read it today? Was it in the Bhagavad Gita? Was Arjuna experiencing this? Was it in the Bhagavad Gita? Where is your reference for your personal experience? Nonsense, forget that. And then you just like, just close down and keep it.
Yeah. You know, the answer to your question.
So how do we know what... What is going wacky?
When all that stuff comes, it's going wacky. Take it from that place. Take it from the when all that like neurotic narrative comes, that's wacky. I know what's wacky, but I understood it's in the context of is it word for the negative part, not for the positive. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's a good
thing. It can move us in ways that we're not used to being moved, so that it's unfamiliar. It's a vulnerable experience.
Yeah. Like today. Not today. You were having this eye gazing experience, and it was a very like direct experience. It's not okay. I will wait for 3 minutes to see what happens. After 3 minutes, it's gone. But after 1 second, you're already in the arena. Whether you feel it's not working or it's working, but you are having experience, right? So for me in that moment, it's not like, I'm feeling great, this is beautiful, I feel the, this mental concoction, this must be false. We can do that, and we can do that with everything. And that's dangerous because we start like to doubt our own perception of basically everything. And unfortunately, in the name of, I don't know, being humble, not speculating, blah, blah, blah. We basically have been absolutely this. In many cases, I'm not saying everyone, and we are not here to play the victim and blame someone from the past, anything. But sometimes we have been disempowered by certain narratives in terms of having our own experience. That's the only thing we can have, no? Which is not less. But so even if my experience is, I would say if you are sincere and you are trying to be as honest as you can and you want to have a transparent relationship with Krishna and others, as much as you can desire all that in your present stage, that's it. Allow yourself for whatever experience you need to have. And even if there are still tinges of things that are not the highest, that's part of the journey. We cannot get neurotic about how getting everything right and having all the most legal experiences totally devoid of, we have to be concentrated about being as honest as I can, which is not small endeavor, by the way, on a daily basis, trying to remain authentic and trusting Krishna's love and grace and inspiration. And there are things to work in between. They are worked out. No? They are being worked out already. Have that confidence, no? Because if not, we start to get paralyzed and frozen. Like everything is worthy of questioning, and we become trapped in our head and filtering everything through intimidation and fear and trigger. And we won't be able to move a finger because it's like everything can be mental concoction, so to say, impotential. So I think we all need to, to have some healthy, humble self-confidence also in our own experience. You know? I know I'm not seeing reality in the most enlightened way by comparing myself with Raghunath Das Goswami. I'm way far from that. But at the same time, how to say, there is a most honest way for me to confront reality where I am now, and I want to be ready for that. And tomorrow it will be a little bit more. And tomorrow, so, yeah. In one sense, that's what I like. How Father Richard says that he speaks about outer external authority and inner authority. So in the beginning, we may be overtly dependent on outer authority, what we are being told to do, what to think, how to think, what. But there is a point, and I'm not criticizing that. I'm not saying that's bad. There is a place for that. Like you are a child, 2-year-old, and your parents just tell you what the universe is about, and you don't have a clue outside of their point of reference, and you think my parents are God, literally. Mm-hmm. That day I was hearing an experiment they were doing with the children, and they were playing, like, I don't know, any game, whatever name game of children, and the researcher asked them, so, I don't know, any popular play for 3-4-year-olds in England? They don't play Scrabble yet, no? It's too complicated.
Snakes and ladders.
Okay, that game. So it has some rules, right? There has to be some rule to play. So the researcher asked the kids, so do you know who created this game? And all the kids were like, my dad. No, there was nobody beyond that, right? God means dad at that point. And who did the game and the rules of the daddy? No, you follow my point?
Yeah.
So there's a place for that. No, we are not criticizing the kids. We are saying, So it's, so it has a charm of its own, as long as the child has 3 years old.
Yes.
Right? If I go to 45-year-old and it's like, we'll be like, oh. So, but there's a place for that. There's a place for that. It's okay. But there's a place for the outer authority to turn into inner authority, which again, it's not like I'm arrogant and independent and do what I want, but by being connected with revelation and teachers and masters and remain connected, I start to develop my own criteria, my own discernment. I mean, I have to. If not, it's a codependent, dysfunctional relationship. I'm expecting my guru to tell me what to do every single day of my life, how to dress, what to eat, how to do the laundry. I mean, you have to do it yourself. Sorry. You have to be dependent enough to become independent and don't be a mess being independent. Right? So this is this verse in the Bhagavatam who says, in some occasions, you have to be your own guru. That's kind of shocking because for many of us, it's like, be my own guru? That sounds like the zenith of narcissism or something, right? Like, who is your Gurudev? Me. And then you, when they are freaking out, you show the Bhagavatam.
Like an initiation for myself.
Oh. You put a picture of yourself? A mirror, just a mirror. Yeah. But the garland in the mirror, not on yourself. No? Yeah, so yeah. You look in the mirror and you're already there. No? But for me, it was funny because in the beginning, I understood that verse, okay, at some occasions, you have to be your own guru. I thought, okay, maybe in some particular complex situation where you are devoid of official connection with someone. But then I thought, no, even if you have all the proper connections in place, so to say, on a daily basis, you don't have your guru next to you at every second telling you how to think, what to do, how to feel. So in that sense, you have to be your own guru. You have to to discern, to think in the best possible way, as according to what you have learned from your teacher, of course, not like divorced from that, but you have to exercise your own will. Of course, we can think, okay, Gurudev say that, Krishna teaches that, what will, like Christians say, what will Jesus do in this situation? But at the same time, at the end of the day, you are not Jesus. No? So you are you. So you can be inspired by what Jesus did while being crucified, saying, Father, forgive them, they don't know what they're doing. But how that applies in my own case? No? So I'm not imitating, but following. So, yeah. Does it make sense?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. And you know what to do with all that wacky stuff. Yeah. That will be the first reply. No, the wacky stuff very naturally becomes self-evident, and you know, okay, when that stuff coming, I know I have to go in the other. I have to go in the exact opposite direction of the. That may be the most effective way of detecting what to do many times. Yeah. Something else, we have a few minutes. I don't want to make it too late. It's 10 to 8. We say that maximum till 8. So trying to respect the rules of the game. So if there's any other comment, question, sharing? Yes.
No one else. Yeah.
Yes.
I was following on from what Yamuna said. Yeah. I just remember back last year in Yamuna's house when you did your first talk. One of the young men who were there, it might have been Prahlad, he was asking you, but it may have been him, it was definitely one of them, was asking you the question about this independent thinking. And you know, he was expressing what so many of us, especially myself, even last year, was worried about, but is that not speculating? You know, we've always been taught, you know, it's hard to,
that's another word, speculation. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Don't speculate.
Yeah. Mm. And he was expressing that we've always been taught that it's easy to change things and the hard thing is to follow, because that's what, how we were trained. So I was thinking, you know, because I thought about this practically for that whole year, trying to understand, you know, when can you trust your independent thinking? Because some people think independently and they do something wacky or crazy.
Yeah.
But, you know, it seems to me that sometimes you just start to know something as a truth that you can't deny.
Mm.
And it may not be what you've been taught, but you just know that seems like the truth to you. And sometimes it seems that Krishna puts us through maybe some sort of purposeful testing where we just, there's no one else really around for some time to reflect that back to, or to, you know, affirm that for us. And then eventually it gets affirmed. But there might be some years kind of like in the desert first, where all you have is your conviction that it seems like it should be a certain thing, but there's no affirmation. And at some point then it finally comes, and then you realize, oh, I could trust that independent thinking.
Beautiful. Nothing to add to that. What can I add to
that? That liminal space is quite painful.
Yeah. Why is painful?
Because it's so uncertain. You're not holding on to either.
Yeah. But why that's why that has to be painful? Why? Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, because if not, we end up blaming liminality. Now, liminal space is painful. No, it's painful to those who are not okay with things being out of control. No? And again, it's not that outside of the liminal space, I'm in control. I'm not in control, but I think I'm in control. It seems more likely that I'm in control. But it's the same. But in the liminal space, it's clear that you are not in control. And we don't want to be confronted with that truth, because we have, we have become convinced I'm in control. And again, the I'm in control is an important point, because sometimes we stigmatize that. Like, oh, you think you are in control, you're such a rascal. And we start to like smash from that. Instead of, again, being understanding and compassionate. Now, why I want to be in control? Because I'm fearful. If things are not in control, I feel terrified about it, because still I don't have, again, the full realization of, you know, the divine's presence and all that and the divine order. So I think every time we speak about this type of things, we have to reach the point of, yeah, I want to control, but not bring the whip and starting like a festival of of self-loathing, right? Because again, we are reinforcing the negativity of the pattern, and it's not solving anything. So, but yeah, I will say that liminality is not a bad thing, you know? Like, to be liminal space, uncertainty. I mean, it's what the faith journey is about. You know? As I always like, and I'm quoting again, my dear Richard, thinking of you here from UK, hopefully you're doing fine in New Mexico. And he will ask very interestingly, so what's the opposite of faith? Those who know the answer, don't say it. So what's the opposite of faith? What you will say without thinking too much? Also, but I want to go in a particular direction.
Uncertainty. Doubt?
A lack of faith?
Maybe.
Okay, now comes his answer. The opposite of faith, the opposite of faith is certainty. Catch that one, Dominic. Yeah, he said faith is not about certainty. No? Because sometimes we think of faith is about having everything clear and certain and safe and in place. That's faith. No, no, faith is about dealing with mystery. No? Krishna is an eternal mystery. And it's not a bad word. It's just like it's uncertain in the sense that I'm confronting the infinite, how much that can be certain. I want to be fully certain about the infinite. Good luck. So faith is about relating to the infinite, and that's infinite mystery. And you have to be okay with not knowing lots of things and trusting in the midst of unknowing. And so he will say the opposite of faith is certainty. And faith could be defined as being patient with mystery. Patient while trusting mystery. Even if I don't have a clue what's going on, I trust the, like, the underlying intention of reality is always one of well-wishing, no, one of unconditional love. No, reality is not conspiring against me, even when it seems so, even when I feel like that. No, faith means a journey into, yeah, beyond certainty. Let's put it that way. So, yeah, in that connection. Manjuali, yes, please.
I just have one question. You were speaking about the inner authority. And I was curious, is the inner authority the Chaitya Guru, or is it our informed intuition? Or, you know, so what is the definition of the inner authority, and what is our relationship and checks and balances of understanding how we can ascertain if it's a true or if it's a mental concoction. You know, our inner authority can be, do you get me?
Yeah, yeah. Can I ask you a question in reply?
Yeah.
What will you say if someone asks you that question?
Well, my inner authority for me,
yeah, yeah,
is the deep relationship I have with the mystery I carry, and which informs me in my day to day, and which has brought me here. Mm-hmm. And but is that Chaitya Guru, or is that just my intuition working through the filter of this human incarnation?
I will not separate the two, right?
Okay.
I will not just put one exclusive to the other. And I won't say, no, it's not Chaitya Guru. It's all about you.
It's in the whole package.
Yeah. Yeah, because I will say that the more we receive this outer authority first,
yeah,
which again, it's necessary. We are not dismissing this.
But we have to learn.
Yeah, of course.
We're students.
Yeah. And then that feeds our how to say, that grounds us in, we are grounded in revelation, grounded in practice, grounded in some connection and relationship. So we also develop some more clear, how to say, discernment to connect with Chaitya Guru.
Yeah.
So his voice, if you want to put it that way, becomes more clear to us.
More present.
Yeah, and our own personal will, so to say, is also more and more evolved in alignment to that. So it's like we have a relationship with other person. We are two people relating, and the more our relationship grows, I can hear you better, and I can also personally be willing to hear you better. So the two of us are growing in awareness of what we want together. So I will connect that to
have faith in that voice, mm-hmm. or in that authority.
Mm-hmm.
That authority is grounded.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just a mental concoction, but it's actually grounded deep within the being.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Totally agree.
You agree?
Okay. Yeah, thank totally. You.
I thank understand
you.
That.
Oh, thank you. And I liked also. For some reason, I'm quoting Richard Rohr in record times, three times today, one after another. But he makes this beautiful connection between authority. Of course, we have been talking outer, inner.
Yeah.
But he also, when he's talking, he's an author. So he says, you don't only be author, not, doesn't mean you are writing books, but it also means you have been authored by life. So when you are authored by life, then you have authority. No. If not, you are not an authority. No, you are an authority. Your words are authoritative as long and as much as you have been authored. You have allowed yourself to be authored by life. No? So that carries power in your presence and example of words. Naturally, you don't need to impose anything. You have been authored by mystery, whatever words we want to use. You allow yourself to be authored, to be written by God himself, until you become an authority after being authored. So I like to just make that connection of words. And one more thing with the speculation, just to kill one more layer of trauma before concluding. Maybe Karuneshwari was not in our walk the other day in the morning.
I was going to take Charlie out.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Do you remember what we were talking the other day about speculation?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We were sharing how a friend of mine, Balaram, shared the post explaining the actual meaning of the word. Can you keep us? Because speculation is one of those, maybe it's in the top five of stigma lingo. But the word speculation has nothing bad in itself. It's a beautiful word, interestingly. The speculation comes from spec from spectacles also, which means like to see, right? With spectacles. So speculation just basically means, which Srila Siramash will say, change your angle of vision. No. See from another perspective. No. Exercise that capacity of analyzing one thing from many angles. That means to speculate. That is interesting how we made of that a monster, basically. No? Like it weaponized the word with something that is not. So it's interesting to learn sometimes what words mean, what words meant originally, and what we've made of them. So we can go back to what they actually mean, whether we need to use another word or to redeem the term and make a whole campaign, let's redeem speculation for whatever. But yeah. So, and that's very desirable. That's a very necessary exercise to be able to contemplate reality from various perspectives. That entails you have to be empathic. You have to enter into other people's story, see life from their side. So that's very desirable. That's actually the thing we need the most. But it's funny that we made the word as the last thing you actually should be doing. No? Every word, sin, again. Sin, originally sin. I mean, I don't want to go in the... Allow me this one, only this one, only this one. What does sin mean? It was the original word for sin, at least in coming from our Western side, comes from the Greek amartia. Amartia means missing the mark. It's an archery term of missing the mark. So you tried to go to the center, you missed the mark, try again.
Yeah.
That's it. Wow. But we may like sin. No? Like this other word, sorry, one more. The very first word that Jesus uses in his ministry is metanoia. Metanoia means change your mind. But how has the word been translated mostly and historically? Repent. That's very different. I mean, there's nothing wrong with repentance, but the word, even how it was used, repent, instead of change your mind. So all these type of things, again, it's just a word, but you can create a whole generational
charge.
Yeah, very loaded, very charged generation, century after century. After 2-3 centuries, the word means who knows what.
It's amazing how you change your mind. That's such a positive thing.
Of course.
Rather than...
Of course.
You're bad.
It's an invitation and change your angle of vision. Speculate. 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 Mantra. For me, mantra means the same. Mantra means transcend your mind or liberate your mind. But it's another way of saying change your mind. Yeah. Change your mind. It's not like dismiss your mind. Change your mind. Wow. Mantra means change your mind. Yeah. Metanoia means that. Speculation means that. Somehow be willing to change and see reality from other perspective. So you can see the unity of all these ideas. It's not about repentance and sinning and this or so. But we humans are very expert in creating all these systems of belief, intimidation, and rules. But again, so much fear behind all that, and we need to control and put everything into boxes, compartmentalized. But these great prophets were not caring for that. No? Jesus didn't come to do that. Mahaprabhu didn't establish any religion. He just was in ecstasy singing, and he just spoke some verses, and his followers put them in order, say, this is the Sikshastaka. He didn't do that. So he did not establish a religion. It came after him. He just was an ecstatic personality, and as I like to say, we have the movement, Mahaprabhu's movement, but originally, which was his movement? Something was moving in his heart very deep. That was the movement, internal movement. And that took him to an external movement of dancing and celebration. And eventually that created an outer movement in form of Sampradaya and then missions and buildings and papers and bricks, which is totally fine as long as you don't forget... As long as that movement fuels this movement. If not, as Bhaktisiddhanta or others will say, let's sell all the marble, let's burn all the stuff, and let's keep the movement moving for what it needs. Okay, we are 8 p.m., 6 minutes, so you're okay. Maybe we can put the discussion to rest, not to close it. Tomorrow we'll continue sharing. So maybe now there is some snack if someone wants, and tomorrow we'll have our meeting in the morning at 10 a.m. after breakfast, and the topic of tomorrow will be individuation, which is a cryptic term, Jungian term, but it basically will have to do with developing our, what we are talking now here, developing our individuality and integrating all that needs to be integrated for us to be all that we can be in bhakti. See you there tomorrow. Sri Sachinandan Gaur Hari Ki Jai. Sadhu Sangha Ki Jai. Sri Hari Nam Sankirtan Ki Jai. Gaur Priman. Vancha Kalpataru Vishcha Kripa Sindhuhi Vacha Patitanam Pavane Pyo Vaishnavi. Ananta Koti Vaishnavindaki Jai. Gaur Hari Hari.